From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. As ISIS has been effectively routed in Syria and Iraq, the situation in Syria is beginning to look like a dance for position in the post-war period. We discussed some of the details with Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer in international affairs at Moscow State University, via Skype Friday.
With Raqqa having fallen, Deir ez-Zor having been fully liberated, and there's a little slight contest, a race to clear up the last cross-border territory, Abu Kamal, which straddled the Syrian and Iraqi borders. There was a little bit of race between Kurdish, U.S.-backed Kurdish SDF trying to get there, and the Syrian government forces, and the Syrian government forces basically cooperating with the Iraqis on the other side. They managed to retake all the substantive territory before the Syrian Democratic, the U.S. proxies, the Syrian Democratic Forces, as PKK was rebranded, managed to, get another chunk of territory. But the race for territory as ISIS disappears almost completely in East Syria still continues to this point. Trump and Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, had a phone call early last week. Yep. And right after this phone call, Erdogan's spokesman comes out and says that Trump has promised him that Trump will stop arming the Kurds. Turkey regards the Kurds, whether they're in Syria or in Turkey, as terrorists. You know, this Kurdish terrorism, and then there are some Kurds, that in their struggle have committed what can no way, shape, or form be mistaken for anything but terrorism in Turkey. Right. Whatever you think of the Turkish regime, that is unquestionable. Now, there's a question of who those Kurds were, what their actual political affiliations were, blanketing the whole, independence movement or autonomy movement of the Kurds in Turkey as terrorists, I think is a mistake. But in Syria, some of these are the same Kurds, obviously, but others are not. And, Kurds in Syria, to say that Kurds in Syria have committed terrorism, is just nonsense. Where's the suicide bombings, the beheadings, the attacks on civilians? No, the Kurds are by and large a secular force, and they have primarily fought ISIS, some of that under U.S. tutelage, some of that under Russian and Syrian government support, and they have fought U.S. CIA-backed Islamists, the Free Syrian Army, Ahrar al-Sham, backed by Turkey and others. They have fought Islamists and jihadis every way, shape, or form, and they have never fought anything more than a few unimportant skirmishes with the Syrian government. Right. Most of that down to local militias that was cleared up by people with cooler heads higher up almost immediately. Right. The Syrian government, at the beginning of the conflict, essentially told the Kurds, we can't protect you from where we are in Damascus at this point, and so you're kind of, on your own. He issued a type of autonomy for the course of the conflict. Right. And then the Syrian government and Russia both provided the Kurds at various places in Syria, particularly Afrin, the westernmost canton that the Kurds own on the north-central west of the border with Turkey, gave them arms, has provided them with close air support. There have even been a few instances when Turkey started their invasion of north-central Syria, they wanted to move further into what was then already Kurdish recovered territory. And the U.S. Backed SDF, presumably with the U.S.'s knowledge, actually cooperated with the Syrian government and Russian forces to turn over territory or to move Russian troops into territory that the Kurds had taken, liberated from ISIS and the FSA and others, in order to prevent the Turks from attacking the territory on the pretext of the Kurds and taking it for themselves. So there actually has been some limited cooperation by the Syrian government and the U.S. and Russia in order to prevent further Turkish expansion to move against the Kurds. Now,
that's interesting, too. That's an interesting development, for
sure. That's actually quite a while ago. Now we have the situation in East Syria. The situation is wrapping up. Trump said when Trump came to power, he stopped Obama's policy of arming the CIA-backed Free Syrian Army, right, who are allied and embedded with al-Qaeda, right? These are Islamists. He stopped that policy. But he increased arms to the Kurds. He provided them even with heavy weapons and increased the number of U.S. personnel in Syria that were advisors, special forces supporting Syrian ops by providing intel, covert options on the ground, and providing targeting data for U.S. airstrikes that were supporting Kurdish, you know, these Syrian Democratic Forces advances. Now, Russia didn't have a serious problem with this. And although, you know, a lot of Syrian voices out there do, Russia hasn't, because Russia has never regarded the Kurds as a serious territorial threat, at least up to this point, to Syria. They never regarded them as a serious threat because they haven't. They've largely avoided conflict with the Syrian government.
Right.
And if at any time during this conflict the Kurds had turned on the Syrian government, something that they doubtless had an enormous amount of pressure from the U.S. government to do, and had fought the Syrian government instead of fighting U.S. proxies, right? And then here we had Pentagon proxy Kurds actually fighting CIA proxy Islamists, as crazy as that was, a proxy war between U.S. government agencies in Syria under Obama. If the Kurds had ever turned on the Syrian government in force, Damascus would now be in flames. Right. I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
That never happened. You know, you can make the argument that the Kurds might, at the end of this, deserve some autonomy, some amount of federalization or devolution of powers of the Syrian government. And I think Russia has always basically backed that position. They've always pushed for the Kurds to be included in the Geneva talks and so on, which Turkey has already always very loudly objected to. And that's part of what makes the Kurds, while such a good tactical partner for the U.S. on the ground in fighting ISIS, which was the Pentagon's primary aim, this is what they were doing while the CIA was focusing on overthrowing the Syrian government. Obama divided up the responsibility there. The military got along with them. They were secular.
Yeah, this is what Obama, I mean, with Trump basically throwing in with the Kurds. What he's doing essentially is throwing in with the Pentagon as against the CIA.
Yeah, he threw in a full bore with the Kurds.
Right.
And the Pentagon was much happier with the Kurds because when they were training them, they didn't try to suicide bomb them like happened repeatedly with the Islamists that the CIA tried to get them to train.
Again, because what we're talking about here is a choice of targets. Trump is saying we're going to attack ISIS, and the CIA is saying we're going to attack the government of Syria.
Yeah, well, that was stopped by Trump. But he doubled down on the Kurds.
Right.
Now that ISIS is effectively gone in East Syria and only has a few small redoubts left in Syria, One of them actually on the border with the Golan Heights, where Israel is essentially providing them with artillery cover to protect them. Right. There's a few small isolated places. But for all intents and purposes, the writing that was on the wall for a long time, ISIS is defeated in Syria as a serious threat anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, the guerrilla warfare will doubtless continue for a long time. A few isolated spots need to be heightened up. But so – this is the problem for the U.S. now. Their ally is the Kurds, but the U.S.'s NATO ally is Turkey.
Right.
And the U.S. has to maintain good relations or relations of some kind with the government that they installed in Iraq, which also is no big fan of Kurdish separatism, having right. just quashed an independence referendum of the Kurds of their own.
And their Kurds, by the way, you know, we're talking the Barzanis had control up until last month of a good chunk of the oil revenue that was supposed to be going to Baghdad. And
was instead right. being smuggled out by Turkey.
Right. That's okay. Now, meanwhile, as far as all that goes, you have, just for context, the Kurds are distributed. They cover the largest geographic area is in Turkey. And then you've got about 18 million, according to the numbers I'm looking at, in Turkey, 18 million Kurds. 2 million in Syria, about 5 million in Iraq, and about 8 million in Iran, but they're pretty much along the border region with the rest of it. So the one that will, if there's a Kurdistan where the Kurds are, Turkey loses the most territory and population, Syria the least, Iran loses not so much territory, although they lose some population, and Iraq loses the oil-producing parts around, up there.
Yeah, there's one reason. I mean, there are plenty of reasons besides the objections of all the existing states, is that all of those Kurds in all of these different countries, and sometimes even within the same country, are not a monolith.
Yeah, they're fighting with each other as much as with any of the other people.
Yes, they are not a political monolith. Some are communists. Right. Some are U.S.-backed capitalist gangsters.
Right.
You know, the Barzani clan. Some of them in Iraq, the Talibani, were loyal to the government in Baghdad and turned on the Barzani. Yeah. You've got the Iranian Kurds, which are kind of out of this whole picture. You've got the PKK. You've got the YPG. You've got now the SDF. You've got the Canton and Afrin in western Syria, which is more under the wing of Russia and the Syrian government. They're a monolith. They are not united politically. They've got different leaders, different ideologies. Yeah. They've got even different religions. There were some Kurds, not many, but there were some Kurds who fought with ISIS and have a handful who have fought with the FSA and other groups. And not large numbers there. But it goes to the point that they are not a monolith, that they are divided, and that's one reason why, yet another reason why there's never a united Kurdistan independence movement across these countries. And the U.S. Really has to watch how much they push the Kurds in Syria towards independence, if towards some type of partition of East Syria or something like that, because they risk complete alienation of Turkey, a NATO member, and Turkey has started making noises. I don't think it's serious, but started making the warning noises that they could consider pulling out of NATO, and the U.S. needs those Turkish military bases for hegemony in the region and confronting Russia and so on, and Iraq. They would if the U.S. did push with the Kurds too far, then they would alienate from their two most important allies in that part of the region and would severely curtail U.S. influence in the Middle East. So the Kurds just are not a viable partition partner. So Trump recently, supposedly, according to Erdogan's people, say that in the most recent phone call last week, now that ISIS is all but defeated, he has promised that he will stop arming the Kurds. Now, no one really believes him, and we have the most recent incident of Trump essentially throwing the Kurds in Iraq under the bus, the Barzanis, after this failed independence referendum and the move by Baghdad to reassert authority and basically drives the Kurds there back into Kurdish controlled Iraq proper, from the federalized areas of Iraq.
Right.
But right after that, the U.S. Secretary of Defense and the U.S. Pentagon spokesman, Mattis, and his people there basically said, well, we haven't received any such order. And even if we weren't supposed to arm the Kurds, we could still arm the SDF, right? Which are 99%, well, maybe 95% Kurds,
right,
and 5% local Arab tribes, because that branding, the military says, would allow them to keep arming the SDF,
right,
not the Kurds, right? Which is, you know, it's just ridiculous.
This is a game that's been going on with all those groups.
Those
This is Al-Qaeda. No, it's not. It's Al-Nusra. Yeah. No, it's not. It's Al-Ibaba. No.
Mattis has said outright that with a look now, with a diplomatic offensive by Russia, with ISIS defeated, to return to the Geneva track, with the strengthened position of Damascus, and in an attempt to settle these things, Mattis has said outright that U.S. forces are not going to withdraw from East Syria, that we're not going anywhere. We're not just going to leave, he said, and give up the leverage they have.
Yeah, which is, by the way, illegal.
Well, of course it's illegal. I mean, the entirety of U.S. operations there, while done under the pretext of fighting ISIS, or at least pruning it, allowing it to expand whenever it abutted Syrian government-controlled territory. But the two UN resolutions that specify that ISIS and Al-Qaeda and any person, endeavor, or organization affiliated with them must be eradicated in Syria and Iraq, the caveat there is that it specifically – the UN Security Council resolutions both specifically say that this must be done in accordance with international law, international law,
right,
which of course means respecting Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity.
That's right.
And the U.S. And its allies have never been invited into Syria. Their presence there has been tolerated, if only to, in the end, try to prevent a war between the U.S. and Syria, or the U.S. and Russia, and so on.
They are. To be kind, to use the term of art used here, at a minimum, they're illegal immigrants.
Yeah, well, they're invaders, actually.
Yes, and occupants, right.
Yes, and now occupiers.
Occupiers,
so,
right.
So we now have conflicting messages on the situation with U.S. forces in Syria and arming the Kurds between the president and Mattis, the leader of this Secretary of Defense and the leader of this cabal of generals, that even Trump has admitted that he's essentially turned military and foreign policy over to them to run.
Right.
And it makes clear that, whatever Trump may tweet on Twitter, Mattis is the person, as a former Japanese minister has stated, that you need to speak to find out what actual U.S. policy is.
Which is a little discouraging when you have a guy whose first name is Mad Dog making your policy.
Mad Dog, yes. Now,
go ahead.
The problem that exists now, the attention turns to Idlib. Idlib governance, which is still a mountainous territory abutting the Turkish border in basically central Syria. And just to the east of that, if you pull up a map, there is the territory of the Turkish occupation, the so-called Euphrates Shield Zone,
right,
where Turkey has conquered a big swath of territory to try to divide the Kurdish-controlled areas of Syria.
It's like towards Aleppo and in that direction, right?
Yes, but also to seize control of the important geographic Jarablus corridor,
right,
which was how Turkey supplied arms to the Islamist jihadi rebels,
right,
Al-Qaeda, and so on, all through the course of this conflict. That was necessary. So Turkey has signed on to this Astana agreement with Russia, Iran, and this agreement, it purports to be an alternate peace process for Syria. And this is a very strategic move. And the way to look at this is not that Russia and Turkey, you know, after Turkey shot down a Russian jet just, you know, a couple years ago, in the onset of this conflict, and Turkey essentially backing every jihadi, including Al-Qaeda and possibly ISIS in the country throughout the course of this. But is Putin and Erdogan waltzing across a ballroom with daggers pointed at each other's backs,
saying that things are back to normal?
Yes. But this is a very smart tactical move by the Russian side, because they long ago decided that the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and others simply couldn't, refused any type of diplomatic settlement. And in order to cut them out of the whole process, both on the battlefield and in the politics, he would cut a stalling deal for time with Turkey, because without the Turkish border, Saudi, active Turkish cooperation, Saudi, Qatar, and even the U.S. Have difficulty getting supplies, arms to their proxies in Syria.
Right.
So, both diplomatically on the battlefield, cut them out so that all the relations are with Turkey. Now, Turkey is not a partner in the peace process, not a partner for Syria anyway. It is literally the enemy. It is dealing with the enemy, because Turkey at this point, on top of their own invasion and rebranding Ahrar al-Sham and the remnants of the Free Syrian Army, such as it was never a really unified army,
but in
uniforms under the new Syrian Army label. That's what they're calling it. Both Jarablus and El Bab, the two largest cities, the two largest urban areas in this Turkish-occupied zone of Syria, the Turkish government is literally setting up Turkish national-branded post offices. Not Syrian post offices. These are Turkish government post offices,
like
opening
annexation,
with branding it all in Jarablus and El Bab.
This
tells you that Erdogan is not going anywhere.
Right.
He regards this territory as historically belonging to the Ottoman Empire and so on, and he does not intend to it. But adjacent to that area is the big problem of Idlib. And this is completely controlled, as everyone admits by now, it's long been true, by Al-Qaeda. They now rebrand themselves as Al-Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS is the acronym they're currently going under. Before that, they were Nusra. But whatever their name, even the U.S. admits they're Al-Qaeda and that they are terrorists, although they probably have regretted that distinction that they made at the beginning of the conflict, because essentially, all of what they call the moderate opposition has long been subsumed under the umbrella of Al-Qaeda in Syria, now HTS. So they're firmly dug into Idlib, and now there's no political division, really, between hundreds of different rebel Islamist and jihadi groups. They're now essentially for all but under the control of Al-Qaeda, which makes them a far more formidable threat. They're supplying their supply of arms, ammunition, and basic supplies, all the basic essentials for life, as any areas under their control are basically, not economically productive. All the people still have to be fed there and so on.
Right.
This all has to come through Turkey, and Turkey has obviously not stopped it. As part of the latest round of the Astana agreements, supposedly this Idlib government was going to be divided into three security zones to be policed separately, in one area by Turkish government forces, one area by Russian police peacekeepers. Most of these would be Chechens and other military police of Islamic orientation in Russia, which would, hopefully help win the hearts and minds there by having other Muslims, even if the Russian Muslims are majority Sufi, to help police the area, and part by the Syrian government itself. That plan has essentially gone nowhere. When Turkish troops moved into Idlib from their adjacent Jarablus and territory, this Euphrates Shield territory, and across the Turkish border, rather than fighting Al-Qaeda, they coordinated and cooperated with them and took up positions in the Afrin Canton, which is Kurdish controlled territory, and have been long been making noises that they want to move against Afrin and the adjacent territories. And this is, no one disputes this. This is, has even very quietly been reported in the Western mainstream media. Turkish military, that is a NATO member, are coordinating and doing joint patrols with Al-Qaeda, with what even the U.S. government admits is Al-Qaeda, in Idlib, this occupied area of Syria. Now, there's a piece up by Sam Heller at the Century Foundation. He has all throughout the Syrian conflict, he has long been a supporter of the rebels up until the last 6 months, when he said only because they can't win at this point should we stop supporting them, right? Because now we're just prolonging the war.
Right.
But he's been a relatively academic writer and someone to follow to understand big picture what's going on from the Western academic support of rebels, the regime change in Syria, and so forth. As I said, recently, within the last few months, he's basically thrown in the towel and admitted that what's left of the rebels, although they always were obviously connected with them, but now is nothing but Al-Qaeda, and you know that they're essentially untouchable. He wrote a piece in the last week. It's on the Century Foundation, Turkey Through the Syrian Looking Glass. You should read it to understand what's going on there between Turkey and Al-Qaeda, how closely they're cooperating. Turkey is going to attempt essentially, if you read between the lines, to rebrand Al-Qaeda, to take them under their wing, maybe pop off a few of the leaders who politically are the most problemsome, the most extremist. And they're going to try and split hairs between HTS in Syria and Al-Qaeda proper as the international terrorist organization.
Right.
Now, even when they announced that there was some political separation before, the leaders of Al-Qaeda proper did, they themselves admitted that it was done simply for branding to prevent political attacks on them. So HTS has no ideological differences from Al-Qaeda. It is simply a PR and tactical thing. This argument suggests that this article, if you read through it, it suggests that maybe at this point, this whole Idlib government should be left to Al-Qaeda,
right,
if it is kept under the Turkish wing,
right,
under Turkish control. Because if you go after Al-Qaeda, there will be lots of civilian casualties,
right,
because of the population that both, you know, willingly, you know, associates with them and follows them. It has to be remembered that the Syrian government has long had the policy of helping relocate jihadis and Islamists that have been defeated elsewhere if they agree to surrender and bust them to Idlib. So on top of what was already the most fertile population for them, you know, defeated, surrendered Islamists and jihadis from out the country in order to prevent final battles have been bussed into Idlib. And so there's a lot of them there, and there's a lot of foreign fighters, foreign jihadis there. And it would be a big, you know, horrible end to the conflict. There's no question at this point that the Syrian government with their allies, Russia, Iran, Hezbollah, would win, but it would cause lots of casualties and all things. But Sam Heller here suggests, and people are taking this seriously now, that perhaps we could let Al-Qaeda control a huge big chunk of Syria and essentially make it a Turkish protectorate, Al-Qaeda protectorate.
With Abu Muhammad al-Jawlani, right, with Jawlani.
Yeah, with Sharia rule.
Right.
And because the only thing left at this point is weird options. That's the way he phrases it, as a weird option. And to give you the equivalent, You know, let's say we just surrender Michigan to Al Qaeda.
Right. Because otherwise it'd be too much bloodshed.
Al Qaeda has taken over a large parts of Michigan, and in order to liberate Michigan, we would have to kill some civilians.
And we don't
because they would be killed, you know, used as human shields, or perhaps some of them are supporting. We have to just give Al Qaeda Michigan as long as Qatar is overseeing.
Mark, thank you very much.
The main thing to keep in mind is that this is not over. Conflict in Syria is not over, and there are tough roads yet to be trod.
Thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate your time as always.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.